asking for your guidance, wisdom, and support as we begin this meeting. Help us engage in meaningful discussions, allow us to grow closer as a group, and nurture the bonds of community. Fill us with your grace as we make decisions that affect the students, staff, faculty, alumni, and friends of this college. Inspire us to solve the challenges we may face and to take joy in the shared triumphs. In your name.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
We have no public comments tonight, so we can move on to the President's report.
Thank you, Madam Chair. In front of you on the table, you should find something that looks like this. We're asking you if you have time and are willing to help us read scholarships. We do this every year. We receive numerous scholarships, but we can award about 1,400 scholarships a year. It's roughly $1.4, $1.5 million that we're able to give away each year. It's not an overwhelming task. It just takes a little bit of time. Once you learn how to do it, you can get through a scholarship in five, 7 minutes, something like that for each one. And each scholarship application we have, we read three times. So we have three different readers who read it, so we can kind of smooth out everybody's sort of differences in how they rate things and come up with the best possible answers. You can do it virtually from the privacy of your own home, or if you would like, we can get a group of people together and have a little scholarship reading collective. So if you have time and you have an interest, if you please reach out to the foundation office, they would love to have your help in making your way.
Teach us how to grade these properly?
Yes, yes. Yep, they go through the whole process with you on how to do that. It's very easy once you get in the groove. It goes pretty quickly. Second thing I wanted to remind everybody is commencement is not this Friday, but a week from Friday. Ask that you be there by 6:15, but remember, traffic is a bear. It's a real bear, so it's getting worse, actually, with all the growth and everything that's going on in the community. So you might be inclined to come and have dinner next door at that nice little restaurant. And then make your way over afterwards. But we're looking forward to that. Hope to see everybody there. We have a lot of activities between now and then. If you find time in your schedule, this Thursday evening is the last concert of the year. It's our Sunset Serenade. Typically we hold it outside. This year it will be inside the Neil. It's every one of our different ensembles that's performing during that time. So it's really an interesting thing to participate in. Both of our collegiate schools are having graduations next Thursday evening. And our Venice campus next Friday morning on this campus. And then, of course, we have our nursing pinning ceremony. So if any of these are things that you are interested in, you'd like to participate in, just let us know in my office, and we'll get you all the information you need. But it's a fun time of the year, but it's a very, very, very busy time of the year. And we're really looking forward to it. And Madam Chair, that's the end of my report.
I just wanted to comment on the scholarships for the newer board members. Never done this. I did it once, and it was one of the most enlightening things I've done related to SCF, because the applications have narratives about these students' lives and their situations and why they are applying for scholarships, and it just gives you an amazing insight into the people that we're serving and what their lives are like at home. So if you have the time, I would definitely encourage you to give it a try. All right, ready for mission moment with Dr. Hale.
All right, thank you very much. Okay, so I did a little science experiment to see what would happen if I stopped taking my allergy medicine. So to experience the results of that. It didn't work out the way I had hoped. So this evening we're going to go over the strategic plan and some of the measurements that we're looking at to gauge process and how we're doing on that strategic plan. I recall the strategic plan did begin January of 21, so we've only had about a year in this plan, and it's not a completely difficult academic year that way either, so kind of had some interesting challenges there with the time frame of that, but these are some things we have developed to look at. So, actually, I'll go over here. So the first thing is, for each of the points of the plan, we have the strategic priorities for that. the first one of these, be the region's first choice for higher education and cultural enrichment, one of the things that we can measure, and we haven't given an exhaustive list of all the different ways we can measure this, but one of the things we can measure is the percentage of graduates from SCF as compared to the total number of graduates in our region from other colleges. That's one of the things we can look at to see how we're doing being the region's choice. The next one is the region's premier employer. One of the things that we've looked at previously, and we continue to look at for this, is the employee turnover rates and average length of service of our employees. The final one there is be the region's high impact choice for donors. And one of the things we looked at there was the annual foundation grants and the annual giving to the college. And so for each of these, what I've chosen is one of them to kind of present and a quick look at what some of the baseline information is. This data is actually lagging behind a little bit. It's 1920 data is the data that we can find that's published. But at that point in time, and continuing, SCF was about 42% of the degrees awarded in our area. Now, there was a question earlier somebody had about some of the institutions you don't see. They just don't make up a high enough percentage of the graduates in the area to get here on the ground. So we were doing a little bit there in terms of our opportunity and our opportunity to present to our community.
Those full-time equivalents?
Those are graduates.
Graduates.
Numbers of graduates.
Gotcha, thank you.
In terms of quality, use quality data and analytics to improve institutional performance and planning. We've been looking a lot at our dashboards and the number of dashboards we've been able to create over the past couple of years. And now we're beginning to try to look at ways of measuring the time to completion of data requests internally. So it used to take, you know, 1 week, 2 weeks, 3 weeks to come up with some of the data. Now that we have kind of more vast reservoirs of that data that's already been collected, some of those turnarounds are very quick. So we're trying to look for better ways of measuring that. The next one, set the standard for teaching and learning excellence. One of the ways we can look at this in a very quantitative way is the pass rates in new modalities that we've developed, new ways of learning and teaching that we've developed over COVID, and how do those passing rates compare to traditional methods and things we used prior to COVID. Some other things that could come up here that we really have a lot of pride in is the scholarship, the publications, the presentations, and things that are made by our faculty, and how that continues to grow. So there's a number of measures there that we'll be making over the next couple of years to present that.
Dr. Hale?
Yes?
Can you give us an example of what a new modality might be as compared to an existing modality?
Yeah, if you'll allow, I'll jump ahead just one second really quickly. SCF Live, which is our, it's an online modality where the professor is synchronous online with the students. And we can compare how that's done in spring 21 as compared to the other methods. And we'll continue to track that and see how that mode does. But that provides our students both high quality education as it compares well with our traditional and online, but it also provides new opportunities. So a student that really wants to be live with a professor, but you know, might have challenges in transportation things, we're able to meet that demand. So thank you for the question. And then the last point here, I have enriched the community's quality of life through workforce training, continuous education, visual and performing arts and athletics. Some really quick measures we can make here, the different ways that we're addressing lifelong learning, workforce development, and the total training occurring. What's the total participation from our industries and community members in those types of programs? So be able to use that as one of the measures of looking at that. Growth. This is a really interesting one. Develop and deliver programs, services, and activities to a changing economic, social, and educational environment. And one of the ways we can look at that is the utilization of our success coaches, which is our new model we're looking at from career all the way through academic advising over time, and the utilization of tutoring and academic success center, specifically the use of online modalities. So while our courses transition online, we also brought up and developed ways of doing tutoring online. So we'll be able to look at how that program has grown and provided those opportunities to students who have those same types of challenges. The next part, build parish campus, parish presence with academic offerings reflective of students' needs in the local economy. One of the best opportunities that we've had is to partner with the new high school in Parrish to offer dual enrollment, not on the high school campus, but students coming to our campus or students taking advantage of those different online modalities that we have. And so that's a place where we can get an early foothold, even with some of those constraints we have. And then the next one is to expand regionally relevant two-year and four-year programs. New enrollments in a number of programs that we'll be able to list. Some of the things that we have going on, business analytics, we're looking at two new baccalaureate programs in education, and we'll be able to measure the enrollments in those new programs as they come up. And so for this one, we have really, and I actually updated this morning. When I made the initial draft of the presentation, there were 52 students enrolled that was coming fall from Parrish. But in 2021, we had two students, and then in 21-22, there were 11 dual enrollment students from that new high school. And this fall, we'll have as many as 67, probably more. That deadline to enroll in that program is not till the 15th of May, so we'll have some more students for that. But you can see the very, very rapid acceleration of the growth. And getting those students into those programs just continues to spread word of mouth what we do throughout that community, gets those families used to the quality and the level of education they can get here. Diversification, we're ensure the college is fiscally resilient to economic and political changes. Some of the ways we've been doing this are new workforce programs in 26 West, revenue streams that the college hadn't realized previously. Fleet Force would also belong within that. Lots of new and exciting ways that the college is generating revenue while at the same time providing new programs and opportunities for education to our community. The next one, expand opportunities for minority, international, and lifelong learner populations. Minority student participation in TRIO, that's not specifically an acronym, it refers to three different federal grants, a group of federal grants. Ours is student services grant, the College Reach Out program, and Summer Bridge programs. These are all programs that specifically target students that need additional opportunities, can really benefit from those opportunities, and we'll look at one of those opportunities that we've taken over this year. And then the last one, increase student experiential learning opportunities with our community partners. A number of experiential learning opportunities our students have engaged in is one of the ways we can measure that. And then we can also look at what are the different new experiential learning opportunities that students have, like 26 West Center, where they can participate directly in some things that are going on in business.
And the second one, expand opportunities for minority, international, and lifelong learner populations. International, what are we talking about there?
Well, do you want to speak to that, Dr. Pierce? What some of those thoughts are, how we can do international with us? A couple, or how we're engaging some of the things that we...
Yeah, I think some of the challenges that we face are longer-term investments in institutions. For example, having more four-year degree options for international students. Many don't want to come just for a two-year degree and then go somewhere else. They want to come and stay for 4 years. So I'll spend an area of emphasis for make sure we have the right kinds of housing. So part of what we've been talking about is looking at what a domestic student pathway program could look like, meaning second generation folks who might not be native speakers in their households. We need to be able to ramp up their English for academic purposes, different from conversational English, at the same time that you're preparing them with the foundation through either Summer Bridge or the CROP program to then be fully immersed in college coursework. This is the work I did for the company I worked for before I came here. And so before we go all in on international students, even though we have some, and that word of mouth, as Brittany will tell you, is huge, especially amongst our athletes, getting the resources in place at the institutional level to be certain we can serve them well before we then go out and actively recruit international students more holistically.
That makes sense?
Yes, it does. Ballpark, how many international students do we have?
38.
That's a specific ballpark. Thank you.
On your
end. Oh, probably. Now I'm going to have to ballpark. I would say half are going to be athletes, but with the athletic component, the housing and scholarship, and other, the transferability, they come in with a purpose and an intent.
So. It's a multi-year strategic plan, right? So we've got to lay the foundation and then begin to grow.
Mm-hmm.
pictures that show now is our college reach out program, our CROC program that's into the high schools, helps students who probably wouldn't otherwise come to SCF or even go on to college necessarily, helps them understand what processes are in place that will help them and what things they need to be doing as they go through high school and middle school. And over the past couple of years, we've been able to expand that to additional locations, and that has yielded additional students being able to participate in that program, many of whom end up coming here, receiving a summer bridge scholarship, and then coming in and taking supports over the summer and continuing with us beyond that. So we're proud of those numbers. Are there any questions at all?
My only question is, do we have any data or student survey that show that the student that stays home and takes courses online, how they compare to a student that's in-house for the professional program?
In terms of their course success rates,
graduation
rates, yeah, we have
test grades. I don't know.
Students felt the interesting thing was when we discussed the question before, what does an online student do compared to a face-to-face? We find that not many of our students are one or the other. They're mostly some blend. Very few are 100% online or 100% face-to-face. But when we compared it, and when we did the study a couple of years back, we split it into five groups. Ones that were mostly online or mostly face-to-face, and then kind of half and half, and then the two in the middle, a little more and one and a little more. There wasn't really any difference between the groups in terms of their performance. So, yeah. I think students gravitate toward the methods and modes that work for them. And sometimes what works for them educationally and what works for them in their schedule, they have to kind of blend that as well. So a student that might not, if they had to go, they're probably better off face-to-face maybe. But if they had to be all face-to-face, they wouldn't be able to take as many classes. They'll take a couple online. And a student who's just better online mostly, but has the opportunity, your scheduling works, to take a little face-to-face, they do it however it works best. That kind of is pretty easy. Okay. Any other questions about the strategic plan? Okay, the other piece that I addressed tonight is the equity report. It's a requirement of the state that we provide an annual equity update. And let me just kind of walk you through a little bit of the process. We talked at length about this last year, but some newer members might need some of this background information. So the state requires it, but then they provide us all the data. So they send us the data tables filled in and just ask us to make some commentary about the numbers that we see. The important parts are we then provide back what are all the things we're doing to address this. Kind of keeps us accountable. Yeah, we're still doing all these programs. We've added these new things, different ways that we're emphasizing, trying to expand the opportunities for all students. There's another column that's called a goal. It isn't specifically a goal, and that was one of the big questions last year. It's more of a projection of where we're going to be, and it's for this current year that's just about to end. So just back in April, beginning of April, there, you know, as we're finishing this up, they're asking us to say, hey, where are you going to be at the end of this year? We're just looking at our own data and giving an honest assessment of, yeah, where do we think we're going to land? And when they ask us whether we hit our goal or didn't hit our goal, all of these groups are subdivided such that if we're looking at, I'll use just gender, which is the easiest one, if we said we were going to be 60% female, 40% male, and we ended up being 41%, 59%, they would say we missed our goal for female, but we made our goal for male. So the only way to actually hit all the goals to say, yes, we hit them, is to absolutely project the number correctly for that report. So that being said, the most important pieces that you're able to see are just kind of the narrative pieces. What are we doing about this? What is the college, as you read this report, have an understanding of all the different programs and services we offer to students to expand the opportunity as much as possible.
What are the ramifications of not meeting our goals on a consistent basis? I mean,
information. We could down adjust the goal to, you know, if we absolutely want to meet a certain goal, all we'd have to do is just be a number, just the number below where we currently see that it is. All we're really saying on those goals.
So we're not being graded somewhere or ranked somewhere or anything.
No, we're asked to respond to, you know, what we're doing about it. It's more of that. It's just a, it's old, I think the statute was 2011 or something. says we are required to do this. So they provide us the data, more or less we fill in and provide it back. Doesn't mean we don't work on it in between. We look at the numbers, we see where the things are, what are the things we can, you know, do to increase hiring in a particular segment or, you know, other things. We do those things as we see the report, but it doesn't have any specific numbers.
Have the numbers ever looked like really off? Like, or do we know exactly where they're getting their numbers?
They get them from their own databases, so no, they don't look off.
So we don't send anything to them at all?
There is a point in time during the year, underneath institutional research, there's an Office of Institutional Reporting, and we have a director who works through with another person, and there's a submission of all of our databases to the state. The state will go through them, and they'll, you know, at that point, that's when we discuss. The state will say, wow, you have a lot of variance in this area. Is there a reason? And at that point, we just provide back, you know, yeah, we started a new program and whatever it was. That's why that number's gone up so much, those kind of things. So we do go back and forth when we submit the database. But once they're submitted, we both agree that the numbers are an accurate reflection of our student body and we go from there.
So I know that with the Hispanic percent of students that are Hispanic, we can hit a certain level. There's actually other grant money that would be potentially available. Mm-hmm. Are there other available funds based off of some of the other diversity and equity?
Yeah, there would be, depending on what our levels were, but I think Hispanic students are the larger, you know, that's the number we're close to. Mm-hmm. Some of the other populations would probably be falling below those thresholds, but, you know, we're rooting, considering for those particular types of funds.
But and we're pretty close on Hispanic, correct?
Very close, yeah, mm-hmm. We're within a couple percent.
Yeah. Okay.
And that reporting, just for everybody here, that's IPENS, which is federal reporting, where those numbers are counted for that percentage. So it's not actually this report, same numbers, but it's a different reporting because that wasn't that one. Any other questions at all? Okay, thank you very much for your time.
Thank you. All right, the non-financial consent agenda, is there anything that any of you would like to pull out and discuss? Okay, I will make a motion to approve.
I move approve the non-financial agenda.
Second. All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? The agenda passes and is approved. The financial consent agenda, anything that you would like to remove?
I have a question. Take it out if you want to.
Yeah, let's.
Really on the financials, seem like we're doing very well, but main hurdle is the increase in enrollment.
Yes, sir.
Which affects reimbursement from governmental agencies, correct?
Yes, sir.
When will we know if the enrollments coming up for next semester? I mean, when do we know if we're getting over this hump of COVID?
Well, it's something that we look at pretty regularly. It's something Brittany studies day in and day out to make new changes and shifts. What we know right now is for summer, we're sort of closing the gap to where we think we're going to be pretty even with the prior summer. We're hoping we're at rock bottom now and that we're turning around. And fall, we've got a good eye on fall right now. Unfortunately, it's not apples to apples, right? We actually got started on fall enrollment a little bit earlier this year than last year, so we're a few days ahead. So right now we look really good, and if you count ahead a few days, it looks like we're probably right on track again with being about even. So we're hoping that now we've turned that corner and we've hit rock bottom and we're on our way back up. So the numbers look really good, but they change every day because of voids and other things that happen. So again, it's sort of a study and analysis. We know actual numbers for summer, the last day I've had drop for summer, second summer session.
When we talk to the high schools, do the students sound engaged and not coming to school?
Students are engaged, yes. The piece that we're really focusing on is building that anticipation to register for classes with our current students.
students. So we're seeing that movement and traction with our traditional students, our seniors, coming in, and they're very engaged. We're working on our current students that have been in the cycle of COVID to have them register and get ready for summer and fall. So it's that retention piece that we're just as active with, along with our recruitment piece.
Really, the state support is down 6% due to appropriation holdback. Is that something that's going to come around to us, or is that what is holding it back?
The state held back 6% last year of revenue based on anticipated state shortfalls in revenue with federal CARES or HRF money. That didn't happen, so we got our money back at the very end of the year, but it looks weird compared to this year because it came in 3 or 4 days before the end of the fiscal year.
So the 6% will be coming?
Yes.
Or has it already been?
Already, yes. Yes, sir.
Thank you. That's all I have.
Any other questions? I'll accept the motion.
I'll move for approval.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Agenda is approved. The project list is included once again. I don't know if you noticed it on page 116. And now we will hear from Mr. Wellman. You don't have laryngitis, I hope.
I don't. Okay, two items. The first one is the last of our CARES projects, hot water and condenser piping, looking for contract approval. And then our Venice new science building, looking to increase the budget. Board members on page 117 of the board package. So this is our CARES 3. It's the third CARES project that I'm bringing to you. It's the last of the mechanical projects. And again, it's the underground hot water piping on Bradenton campus and our cooling tower condenser piping replacement. Great projects for us. We are utilizing half-acre construction as part of our CM continuing contract. Design was completed. Half-acre advertised. They did get competitive subcontractor bids. And the cost includes the general conditions, the overhead, the profit. All that's been evaluated. It's been found to be fair and reasonable. And the requesting board approved the contract for half-acre for $1,136,561. And that is within budget.
Any comments or questions?
We all look at the mark.
All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Motion approved.
Okay, now a little easy one. For a Venice Science Building project, looking for budget increase. Bear with me, I'm going to give a little bit of history here. So, summer of 2020, we established the budget. It's part of our capital improvement program. The DOE gives you a template, gives you possible square foot numbers, you plug in your program. The DOE takes the average of 10 years worth of similar projects, and then they adjust for inflation. So our initial budget was $3,944,000. So then September of 21, came back to the board and I asked for an increase in the budget of $555,457. And that was based on looking at the past 12 months. We saw a 15% increase in cost of construction. So that put our total budget at $4.5 million. So researching just the cost of construction, looking at engineering news record, RS means, so that we approved the budget in September at $4.5 million. So fourth quarter of 2021, our cost of construction increased 3%. First quarter of this year, increased 5.3%. And there's absolutely no indicators out there that there's any relief in sight. We're at this trajectory. It doesn't even look like it's going to level off. And it's kind of like asking, where do you think the value of your house is going to be it's based on, it's just at 8,900 square feet. It's three labs, a prep area, an electric classroom, a student study area, and an office. It's a box, it's conservative, it matches the architecture on the Venice campus. And it matches the original program that we went to the DOE and asked for funding. So we haven't dreamed the dream and created Cinderella's castle. It matches what our five-year educational plan survey identified. It matches what our CIP, our annual CIP, identified. So the program is right in track. Nothing grew out of hand there. So Dan took that, and it could have done one thing. I had simply looked at historical costs, put an inflation on it, plug in a bunch of allowances, and came back with a cost estimate. That's not going to fly in this environment. So Dan went out, reached out to all their subcontractors, the various disciplines, mechanical, electrical, and the main roof and siding, and actually handed them the 45% design packet and asked them to evaluate and provide their best cost estimate based on, again, it's a 45% design estimate. It's the most due diligence we can do at this point in this market with where the design's at. There's a little bit of challenge is we're at 45% design. If we get approval tonight and we proceed with design, that's going to push us probably end of June, 1st of July, design completion. And we'll take that as construction drawing, so advertise, so we'll receive competitive subcontractor bidding. So that means we're going to actually get pricing in probably the August time frame. So fourth quarter of last year, we went up 3%. First quarter, we've gone up 5%. Where are we going to be in August? And I only want to be coming back to the board one time. So working with Tandem, taking their best shot at crystal ball of where we're actually going to be in August. So the estimate came in at $5.8 million. That's $1.3 million over the $4.5 million, about 29%. There's adequate fund balance. So the state money we're getting is just under $3.5 million. That would require approximately $2.3 million of our fund balance, which would give us a total project cost of $5.8 million. So I'm requesting board approval to increase the budget to $5.8 million.
Because the state money is approved, right? That's essentially in the bank for us.
We're waiting for the governor to approve.
Okay, it's in this budget that hasn't been signed yet.
Okay. A piece of it.
Okay.
Right, it's 1.1.
1.1.
Yeah.
The amount we received previously.
We did receive the other part previously. Okay.
Can we have this, can we talk about this in the larger context of future projects? Do you want to tee that up?
The next project we typically would have looked at would have been the new Venice Collegiate School building. But given the lack of foreseeability into the future of cost of construction, we have gone forward and moved the portables down there, or the cottages as we refer to them. We will be able to accommodate our collegiate school for a while we're waiting to see how this shakes out. So we are not looking to propose any new construction. We will work with the funds we have to complete our HERF projects, and with the $8 million and change, assuming that gets through the budget process this year, for those deferred maintenance items, and not look for new construction. Barring some, you know, bluebird from heaven that showers $25 million on us to do something, we're not pursuing any new construction until we have more foreseeability in the future.
So can I ask on that? Just going back to the parish students that went from two years ago to 67, that's quite a projected rate going forward. I realize the geometric progression gets a little iffy after a little bit, but nonetheless, how do we handle that if we're not going to be building anything in parish for indefinitely? Because that sounds like kind of a long way out.
Well, I think, you know, we'll still consider asking the legislature for money. The kind of projects we would be doing out there is not a construction of a building. It would be the unromantic things like infrastructure,
stormwater,
those kind of things that we...
And for that, do we need to show them like a master plan for the site and all that?
Mm-hmm. And I mean, you're kind of going to the issue of our capacity to serve as our community grows. I have to think that our expanding modalities helps when we are not in a position to be able to build new buildings.
Another possibility, particularly out in Paris, that we've kicked around a little bit is the idea of leasing space, like we did in Venice when we started down there with the brickyard. And if we needed to have a physical location, commercial property isn't a bad thing to look at right now. That's a possibility as we look forward as well. But yeah, we're watching those numbers. That is where our growth is, that and Welland Park on the south side. But we have our Venice campus that's well positioned for that.
Chris, are these contracts, I don't know the construction language, but are they fixed guaranteed contracts at a certain price, or is it just, this is what we think it's going to be, it'll be whatever it is?
So right now it's a 4-5% design, it's simply a cost estimate. Once we get to 100% construction drawings, we hand that off, they get competitive subcontractor pricing, we negotiate general conditions, so basically the field overhead, negotiate their fee and their office overhead, but then it's we don't turn it into a fixed price. It stays a guaranteed maximum price, because you will still have some allowances in there, and what's not spent comes back to us at the end of it.
But the subcontractors are signing a contract. We're doing
absolutely
plumbing for X amount.
Yes.
Okay.
In August.
Right.
I'm sorry.
In August.
In other words, Chris is asking for a pretty good size increase. But we won't have plans to August. It won't be bid out to August. And that's the price that we'll be back in the hopefully no more than 5.8. Because, you know, as the Fed turns down the economy, you know, this is where it will affect the most construction. But a year from now, we might be looking at a lot better atmosphere to build. However, this project has gone too far forward, in my opinion.
Yeah, I would agree with that, and I happen to have probably spent more time at the Venice campus than most of the board members, even well before I was ever a board member. And if you compare it to this campus, it really needs some help. It's aging, and if we're going to stay competitive in that part of the county, we've got to focus on some upgrades, and I think this science wing is very important down there. So if we can swing it, you know, I hope that we can and we can do it, knowing that we're going to take a pause for a little bit on launching new projects.
Yeah, I agree with that. I mean, I think that this project's too far along. Pause it now. I think we have to finish it and then. I'm hoping I heard you right when you said that this $1.3 million increase was kind of trying to take into account getting out to August.
Yeah, for example, right. We got a 5% material escalation built into the 5.8.
Right.
The 5%, another line item for contractor contingency, and then we're carrying another contingency at the bottom because we've got to cover, especially for the science building, the furniture, fixtures, and equipment, trying to predict where that cost is going. So we have thought through that, and without just throwing unrealistic amounts of contingency into it, you feel we're in good shape.
What will happen is, let's just say I go to bid, they'll come in at some number, more than this 5.8, then we're going to go back to DE, value engineering, to try and get the numbers down. The trouble is, this is a box, and there's not much DE you can do on it, because it has to be, the materials have to be exactly what they are, because it has to match. The roof has to be what it is, it has to match. And all you can deal with is a few interior things. So there's not going to be much DE in the name. So I look forward to the prices in August or September or year. But there's not much they can do in that regard. So this kind of is what it is.
Chris, just for the record, what would the options be if we didn't afford it?
We have three options. One is postpone. Let's have their bid, see the cost of construction is a year from now. Years from now, if we made that same decision last year, I know one example that's out there, $9 million building last year, and the owner said, let's pause, and then they decide, let's
move forward a year later and it costs them $11 million. Your guess is as good as mine. If we were to pause for a year, what would happen? The others to proceed forward, which is certainly my recommendation. And then the others to value engineer. And if you were to try to get back down to $4.5 million, it's basically carving out 2,000 square feet of it. That's one of the labs and that's one of the lecture halls. And you just destroyed the program in the long run. You know, this is a 75-year-old building that's going to be there forever. We're building for the future. Value engineering at this point just doesn't make much sense.
$663 a square foot.
Can you believe it? That's incredible.
That's a lot of money.
So with the land already purchased.
That's a lot of money.
I move approval.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed?
Question. Since we need a space for the collegiate program down there, are there any buildings that could be dual use? I mean, I don't know how many kids are in there every day, I don't know. But is there any way classes could be moved around to buildings that aren't represented for to open up an existing building for the collegiate program?
For the collegiate school, the 11th and 12th grade is all on the college campus anyway. So we're talking about 9th and 10th grade. And in 9th and 10th grade, we deal with issues of having to provide for a secure facility for those students separate from other facilities on the campus. So it becomes very difficult to share those facilities unless it's night or weekend when the traditional 8 to 5, you know, 9th and 10th grade would be needed.
The answer is no.
Yeah, it's a whole separate set of rules.
Jessica Lunsford.
When you're talking about collegiate schools.
Okay.
Good question.
Thanks, Chris.
Thank you.
Great. Do we have any old business? Any new business?
I have a question. If it's the will of the board, we have new chairs now in the boardroom over in Building 7. So we can move back in there if it's the will of the board to
move.
Return to that facility.
Second.
You move to move?
Yes, I do.
All right, second.
Okay. We'll schedule our meetings there.
No new business? Foundation report?
Yes, quick report. The evening under the stars was a great evening, and many, many people in here were there, and financially, it was very, very good. The foundation had budgeted a net profit of just shy of $30,000, and in the end, we were almost $93,000 in net profit.
Fantastic.
So that's fantastic. The giving challenge is going on right now, the Patterson Foundation. So from noon today to noon tomorrow, you go to the SCF Foundation website, they have a quick link, and your donation up to $100 will be matched by the foundation, by the Patterson Foundation. And then lastly, to reiterate, the reading of the scholarship applications we've done it for years. It's really, it's enlightening. Sometimes it's humorous. Sometimes it'll make you cry. But, you know, contact the foundation and they'll get you hooked up to do that.
Just go around the room. Anyone have additional comments? Jamie?
I agree with Mike. If you all have not participated in reading those scholarships applications, it's amazing. It's amazing. And it's very heartwarming. And it makes you realize and enforces why you're here and what we're trying to do here.
I'm good.
I don't believe I have anything either, Taylor.
I just wanted to comment. I was reading that the beach volleyball team that just won the national championship, we only started that in 2019.
Yeah, the National Junior College Athletic Association doesn't have a network yet for beach volleyball. we've been involved in beach volleyball for several years, and we've always been very good at it. The Coaches Association, who coach beach volleyball, started their own sort of national competition this year, and we won that national competition. So, yeah, with formal beach volleyball, it's only been a couple of years, but it's now been maybe, anybody's been around for a while, help me remember, maybe 10 years ago when we had the beach volleyball competition out at Siesta Key, and we won that competition as well, and the team we beat for the championship was Ohio State. And our young lady who played in that competition went on to play in the Olympics.
Wow.
Beating Ohio State is just great.
Well, our Rainbow team beat Duke.
So.